Thanks for coming. I know it's pretty early. My name is Ben Moskowitz. I'm a research fellow at New York University. And welcome to today's session on, let me get it all right, new methodologies for prioritizing preservation needs for audiovisual materials. So we'll be talking today about a tool developed by both us at NYU and at Columbia, two separate tools, but they go along with each other. We had Janet Gertz here today. Janet is Director of Preservation and Digital Conversions Division at Columbia University. She's been at Columbia for 20 years now? 20 years. She has an MLS from the University of Michigan, and she'll be speaking first, and then I will be speaking. As I said, my name is Ben Moskowitz, and I'm actually a recent graduate of New York University's Moving Image Archiving and Preservation Program. And I work at Bulb's Library, which is New York University's library, in the Preservation and Conservation Department, where I'm a Mellon Research Fellow. So no more further ado, Janet.
Morning, and thank you for coming so early to listen to us. I would like to give credit immediately, before I get started, to Marcos Suero, who's not here, but who is the person who actually developed the survey tool I'm going to be talking about, and who then tested it out on 42,000 things out of our collection and lived to tell about it. The basic question is, why do we need a tool to survey audio and visual materials? And I think we all know very well that our audio analog materials and our moving image materials are very fragile. They deteriorate rapidly, they become obsolescent rapidly, and they have to be reformatted for long-term preservation, and we don't have enough money to do it. You know, we all, well, at least Columbia has stuff like that looks like this in its collections, and I hope for your sake you don't have too many things that look like this or like that. The way to attempt to save the sound on these objects is to digitize them, and digitizing moving image and audio materials is a very delicate and expensive operation, very time-consuming, and so we need to find ways to prioritize among them. And they're not, it's not only that they deteriorate rapidly and that there are lots of them, but that you need to know something about how they deteriorate in order to set priorities. Deterioration happens at different rates depending on the material you're working with. So if you have a vinyl record, which is the sloping blue line at the bottom there, vinyl records were invented a while ago, and they are inherently quite stable. They will go on with rather small degree of deterioration on into infinity, which is the dashed blue line heading off to the edge of the screen there, unless something happens to them, if they're stored properly and they're handled properly. But if damage occurs, which is the green arrow heading straight up there, if someone handles a record badly and it gets badly scratched, there will be a noticeable change in the quality of the sound content on that object. But then if after that point it's again stored carefully and handled carefully, it won't get noticeably worse until it's been around for quite a long time. This contrasts very noticeably with DAT, digital audio tape, which is the red line heading more or less straight up to totally irretrievable. DAT was invented very recently, and it deteriorates very quickly. The tape is so thin that it can stretch, there's print through, it can lose signal. And so there are people who have DATs that have lost their content within 5 years. So if you're have preservation funds to take care of one object, and you have a vinyl record and a DAT tape, even though the vinyl record is older, the DAT might be the thing that you need to preserve first. But how do you know that if you're not an expert in audio and moving image media? And that's where I was at the point when this project started. And so we went to the Mellon Foundation to say, we need a survey tool, give us money, and we'll build one. And the idea was to build a survey tool for people who are not expert in audio and moving image media, that we would make this tool available freely online, and it is, and there's a handout in the back of the room that tells you where to find it. It's built out of a Microsoft Access relational database, and it is based on visual inspection of the material. You do not need to have playback equipment to use this survey tool. It's, we hope, designed with a friendly interface, so you don't need to know Microsoft Access to use it either. And if you do know Microsoft Access, you can customize it to suit your own needs if you want to do that, or you can use it as it stands. The tool basically gets the data that populates it from three sources. First is someone who's been trained how to use the tool but is not necessarily an expert in audiovisual materials, who has to be able to recognize that what I'm holding in my hand is a cassette tape or, you know, a VHS tape, but doesn't have to know details about, is this brand a good or bad brand? How fast does this deteriorate? And so forth. Then the curator or the archivist, who knows the value of the content of the collection, which is the expertise that only the archivist will have. And then there is a built-in knowledge base within the survey tool that carries a lot of the expertise and that does the calculating and the setting of priorities for you. And the outcome is a set of broad priorities for preservation. It's not going to tell you, take this item first, but it is going to give you a matrix of, here's a suite of materials and collections that are higher priority due to their risk level than others. Our survey tool is loosely based on Caliper. I don't know if any of you are familiar with this, which was developed by the California Preservation Program. And we liked their methodology for setting priorities, so we stole it. With attribution. Basically, what we do with our survey is to get information about the factor on the left, add them together to add up to the factor on the right, then take the factor on the right and feed it into the next layer until you get down to the bottom where you have your priority. And so let me go through these factors quickly. Exposure to threat is the first large category, and that is essentially exposure to outside dangers of various types. And use is obviously an outside danger, but our survey tool does not explicitly calculate use because we were focusing on special collections materials, not open, heavily used collections. However, for those who want to count use in their use of this, want to count use as they make use of the survey, there is a method for doing that that's described in the manual that accompanies the survey. So the factors we are counting on really are environment and housing. Environment is the macro environment, you know, the temperature, humidity, and so forth of the storage area that the materials are kept in. And then housing is the micro environment. What's the box, the can, the tin, or the nothing that the thing is stored in? Because these can all have effects on the object, as you know very well. So that gives you exposure to damage from outside events, and you add to that the physical condition of the object itself, which gives you then vulnerability to loss of the content on the object. And condition is the physical condition of the specific piece you're trying to survey, and it is a combination of the inherent instability or stability of the medium and the damage to which it has been subjected, and then the type of chemical deterioration that that medium can undergo and how far along this particular piece is. So inherent instability, this is, you know, the vinyl disc that won't deteriorate very rapidly, or the DAT tape that will, or the nitrate film that is inherently a very bad problem, obviously. Deterioration then is something where you don't have to know what this symbol, what the symptom of deterioration means. All you have to do is recognize and check off things like, smells like vinegar, push the button that says vinegar smell. I see mold, click the button for mold, and so on. You don't need to know what they mean. You just need to be able to recognize them when you see them. And again, the manual gives you instructions on, you know, how to recognize these sorts of things. The other aspect that goes in is what is the brand of tape, which you can see by observation and you input that sort of thing. Then the interior knowledge base of the survey tool puts all these pieces together and says, aha, your thing is in this particular condition, which has this level of vulnerability to loss. Then we take that vulnerability and we add to it the obsolescence level of the format, which we have calculated. This is all in the knowledge base. You don't need to know how obsolete something is. You tell the database what the brand and the format is, and it calculates. And this is based on the situation when we made the tool, obviously, of, you know, is the equipment for this format still being manufactured? How widely distributed is the equipment, even if it's not being manufactured? You know, what is the likelihood that you can find someone to play this back? And this is something that will obviously change over time. 5 years from now, there will be different levels of installed base of equipment. Things will have stopped being manufactured. And this is where the database can be altered. You can go into the tables that underlie it and change the ratings for obsolescence if you want to use the tool, and we will also, if somebody wants to use the tool several years from now and feels that these ratings need to be altered. So now you have the risk of loss of content, and to that you add the value of the content, and that gives you your priority for preservation. And we judge the value of the content in two factors, which the archivist has to pick on a scale of 1 to 5, how good is this collection. Intellectual value, these are the things that you are extremely familiar with from appraisal. You know, what's the informational richness? How important is it for evidence? How useful will it be in future for research, teaching, etc.? That whole combination of factors. And then a thing we called local value, which is sort of an odd term, but what it really means is the things that don't have to do with the richness of the content but still play a factor, like, is this an expensive object? Does it have association value? Would it look good in an exhibit even if it doesn't have particularly interesting content? Those sorts of factors. So you put all of that together and you get your priority rating. And all of these things are rated on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being you really don't have a problem, up to 5, which is an acute problem, do something soon. And you'll see, as I show you the tool, it actually turns red so that you know that you have a problem. So let's talk about how the information in the survey is structured. Since we started with someone who was an archivist putting this together, the information is collected at the collection level, then the container level, and then the actual piece level, which should be very familiar to everyone and very comfortable to everyone. And I'm only doing screenshots because going live is always death to any presenter, so I hope you can see these. This is the initial screen, and if you click on the top button, you get the data entry screen. The rest of them lead you to different types of reports. If we click on that top button, data entry form, we get a search box in which you can search for any data you've already put in, or you can open up an empty field and start creating a new collection entry. And here we're going to search for the test collection, which is the only one that is actually in the database right now, just as an example of how it works. You click on that and you get the collection level screen for that particular collection, where there is room for things we haven't filled in here. You can put all sorts of notes and where it is located and so on. Down the left, you have basic descriptive information, like where is it located, and also the ratings for intellectual value, which in this case we decided it was 5. It's a unique collection. Truly, it is unique. It doesn't even exist. Local value, intellectual access, and so on, all of that there. And then the box to the right of that gives a list of all of the potential types of media that might be in it. It tells you how many of each you have. And in the yellow, the average condition of those pieces of media. And if you have something that's at the acute level, as I said, it turns red, and it tells you how many of those you have that are at that level. So you know simply by looking at this screen whether you have a problem in this collection. Then if you click on the Show Units button up at the top there, you get to the place where if you're doing a new collection, this is where you start entering the item-by-item information. And here we're looking at, up at the top here, there are places to say which container unit am I in. In this case, I'm in box 1, and it has such and such a barcode, and it's a record carton that I'm working on. And then I will start describing each of the pieces of media that's in that box. And there are 13 buttons below it, one for each of the media that we work through. And right here, we're open to the video cassette media. And each of these media tabs is constructed to have the specifics for that medium. And I'm here demonstrating that most of the information down the left side is descriptive. You know, what's its environmental condition, what kind of container does it have, and so on. Many of these are drop-downs, so you don't have to figure out what do I call this container. You just have to scan down the list and find the one that matches best your situation. And then over to the right are lists of symptoms that the item may be demonstrating. And again, all you have to do is click those off. You don't necessarily have to know what it means. Here we have clicked off on the right there. One of these, there are two cassettes, video cassettes being evaluated here. One of them has foreign objects in it. That's the little blue checkoff box, if you can see that, in the first column of symptoms. And in the second column of symptoms, we've indicated that two of them have edge damage. If you don't know what edge damage is, the manual explains what it is, and it has lots of links out to other sources where you can see pictures and so forth to help you identify these things. Now, we've switched over to the sound tape reels tab, where you can see that the questions asked are similar but not identical because this is, again, customized to that particular medium. And we're looking here at speed, and I have this open to show you that the survey tool works on metric measurements because math is so much easier if you're doing metric, but of course none of us, and because Marcos is European and he thinks in metric, but of course none of us do. So there's a pop-up whenever you have to do a measurement that comes up and says, if what you've got is 1 7/8 inch, that equals so many centimeters. So you don't have to do the math. It's there for you. I asked him to do that because I couldn't cope. And this, I think, is possibly the thing we're proudest of, this whole thing. So again, with the sound tape reels, you check off, you know, the symptoms on the right-hand side that you observe. And here we have checked off cupping, which is marked with the yellow thing, which is, you know, a symptom, but it's not a horribly dangerous symptom. So the system has taken the fact that this is a sound reel, its container condition was poor, it's from 1967, its speed is this, and all of that, plus, you know, the built-in obsolescence rating, plus the fact that we've observed that it has cupping, and it's come up to say that the overall physical condition of this thing is 3, which is moderate. It's not immediately endangered, but it's also not in perfect condition. It's something you're going to want to think about for the long term doing something about. If, however, we check off mold, which is the red box, the rating changes to 5, very poor, do something about this immediately, and you get that red thing that says, you know, you have a problem, you have a problem, you have a problem, so that as you're entering data, you already know that this item is something you're going to need to pay attention to. So I'm not going to go through all 13 of these tabs because they all work the same way, just changed to suit the particular medium. There are two other pieces of information that you can put into this survey that do not affect the ratings. You know, if you leave this off, it won't change whether it's a, you know, how the priorities come out. But we find these useful pieces of information in planning. And one is there intellectual control over this collection? It's another 1 to 5 scale rating, ranging from, yes, we have perfect EAD online, to, well, there's some sort of minimal inventory, to, there isn't a single piece of information anywhere describing this collection. And if then you're going to plan a preservation project based on this tool, at least you've got that piece of information sitting in front of you. If I'm going to work on this, I have an intellectual control problem as well as a preservation problem. The other piece is rights ownership, where in the same way we document whether there is something on paper that says who owns the rights to these collections. From, we have, you know, a perfectly executed deed of gift that specifies everything, down to there's nothing at all. No one knows who this collection belongs to or who owns the rights. We don't enter who owns the rights, just the fact that there is information that's better or worse to tell you. It would be very easy for an institution to do a customized blank on the form where you could actually fill in who owns the rights if you wanted to do that at the same time. Then once you've put in all the information, you can get a variety of reports automatically. You can get a summary of all the items that you've surveyed that will rank them in various ways. You know, what do you have the most of, what's in the worst condition, and so forth. You can get a report about an individual collection, and then you can get collections ranked by the different media and how they are... how they've been judged. You can also, if you know anything about Microsoft Access, set up your own queries to ask for specific pieces of information. Any of the information that's in there can be brought out by a query. So this, I'm sure you cannot see the details of this, but this is the report of the test collection, and what it gives you is a list of the quantity of each type of medium and the overall condition for each of those media, with the ones that are at the 5 level, again, highlighted in red, so that even... The thing with averages is if you have one thing that's very good and one thing that's very bad, and you look at the average, it looks like it's not a problem. And so, you know, you always get the average comes to the middle. So we wanted to make sure that you didn't miss the fact that there are things endangered in this collection. And then other things will tell you what the average container condition is and so forth, so that if you have a rehousing problem, that will show up here. If you have an environmental control problem, that will show up here. This is a screen that shows you what happened when Marcos surveyed our 42,360 items. We have almost 18,000 cassettes. He said if he never saw another cassette as long as he lived, it would be too soon. And for almost everything except our optical discs and our video discs, our average ratings are coming in around high twos to mid threes, which is sort of the, you know, it's not going to die tomorrow, but you better think about it for the future. If, and this screen, I have not put in the acute problems, but it turns out that 28% of our items are either at the 5, you know, fix it now, or 4, which is you have a serious problem and you really ought to start thinking about it soon. That's about 12,000 items that are seriously endangered in our collections. And if you know anything about the cost of digitizing audio materials, you know that this is an extremely large amount of money that we're looking at. And of course, we could not do anything about, you know, 12,000 items is much too much for what you could possibly approach in any reasonable amount of time. But that's before we put in the how important is this, what is the value of the content. You know, what we're looking for is the intersection of risk plus value. And when you do that, you know, aim for that red check mark, which is it's got the highest value and the highest risk factor. That becomes a much more manageable number of things, and you can focus in on that. The things that are of high value but that have minimal risk, they're fine. They can sit where they are. You're happy. And if they're at high risk but they have minimal value, you can say, well, you know, if we lose it, we lose it, and no one will really care. Or maybe we could even deaccession it, and then we wouldn't have the problem. But, you know, where that red check mark is what this survey tool is set up to get you to that point so that you know. It won't tell you fix this item, fix that item, but it will tell you which collections you should be focusing on. And as I said, there's an instruction manual that goes along with this, and it's up. It's on our website. It's freely available to anyone who wants to download it with the manual. And there's a handout in the back that has the URL if you don't want to write it down. But you can also email me at gertz@columbia.edu. And we are happy to answer questions if anyone tries, you know, to use the survey and you say, but wait a minute, I don't understand, this isn't working. You know, feel free to email us and we'll respond. So thank you.
Just bear with me for 1 second. I'm just going to lower my presentation up. No, well, it didn't work. Oh, well, I'll just go then. Hello, my name is Ben Moskowitz again, and I'm here to talk to you today about NYU's VIPOS, which is, as you can see, the Visual and Playback Inspection Rating System, which is, well, let's go into it. Okay. 1 second. All right. If you guys remember the the Calipo and the Columbia formula that we saw from Janet's presentation, that you know, this is how they set up the determine the preservation priority value. The VIPERS tool is a bit more of a condition assessment survey thing, where we focus mostly on condition. You know, you could say it's a lighter version. But with condition, we also take in the aspects of exposure and obsolescence. So it's really more encompassing a risk assessment tool, but, you know, focusing on condition. So let's take a look. VIPERS only handles magnetic media, right, at this moment, which we cover U-matic. You can see a little U-matic tape right here. The VHS, quarter-inch open reel, and audio cassette. We do a visual inspection, which is we take a look at the physical content of the media, and then we do a playback inspection to see, to verify any information that, you know, the physical inspection did. Because as magnetic media goes, you can only really know unless you play the item to judge its accessibility. Because it could be blank and you don't know it because it's a piece of tape, you know. So we have the signs of physical problem that we look at for the visual inspection. There's exposure issues, if we're using the Kappler language, which, you know, happen within housing and the wine of the material. There's also conditions like deteriorations, but physical signs of these deteriorations of chemical, biological, and physical deterioration. If we look at, you know, winding aspects, we can see some different ones. Some of you may have seen this thing before. It's all over the place. There's, you know, pops, pack slip, flange packing. These are all different wind issues that can affect the media during playback. As you can see, what a poor wind tape looks like. Here's signs of chemical deterioration. This is this white crust that's forming from the deterioration of the thing. A little bit hard to see if you can see it right here. You know, also, you know, adhesion failure from, you know, the backing of the things falling apart, which is, you know, visibly noticeable and also a sign of chemical deterioration. Biological deterioration, as we can see here, some mold, everybody's favorite thing. You know, a bit more mold right here on a VHS tape. Some physical deterioration, which we got some spanning, and, you know, actually breaking of the cassettes. Other aspects of in accessibility, there's obsolescence, as we discussed before, you know, obsolescence. The media is no longer playable. It's become, you know, too costly for the archive to transfer it to another format. And there's also, you know, foreign and uncommon standards, which, you know, playback speeds that you have a deck that can play 7.5 and 15 inches per second audio cassettes, but, you know, it doesn't play 3 3/4 or the 1 7/8, I think. So let's take a look at our tool. It's another access database with accessibility. It's just, you know, inputting new records. It's very much simpler than the Columbia tool, but it's, again, more focusing on the condition assessment. We can go to record. This is an input screen for audio material. We first focus on whoa, see, I guess that was weird. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is a, try to go back to that. Well, we'll just look at it this way. We can see here focusing on biological deteriorations, because biological deteriorations are actually hazardous to the surveyor. So, you know, you want to look at those first, health and safety first. So something that's biological deteriorations, you sort of, you know, want to put those aside immediately for, you know, more experienced people to look at. We have ideas of physical and odors that can tell, as Janet covered, odors that are signs of chemical deteriorations, physical signs that can tell, small tape, brand of tape, playback formats, and stuff like that. And also other physical signs of deterioration, light crystalling, and the brittleness that I showed you before. So that's not working. After that, if it's determined that the material is playable based on its visual inspection, we do a playback inspection, which involves playing back the material. And first you just put it on the machine to see if it plays. So if it has smooth play. Then you play the first minute of material, look for signs of deterioration. And then you play the second, another minute later on in the material to see the deterioration. Same thing for video material. Just a slight little difference is, we have ideas of popes build up, which is something that's another problem that's unique to video material. It's not really present in audio material. It's just looking at the post to see if all the build up is built there. So it's, again, focusing on individual aspects of the media. And the playback screen for video is a bit more has a bit more stuff on it, but then again it also takes into consideration aspects of video which have dropouts and visual problems as well as audio problems. Our rating system is the same rating system as is. We just give it a slightly different names. One, from 1 to 5, 1, 2, and 3 are passing conditions, as 1 and 4 and 5 are failing conditions. Not meaning that the material is not bad. It's just that material has become determined that it needs to be further looked at or needs to be handled in a special way. We did an initial test of our material with. Excuse me, 1 second. We did an initial test of material with about. Sorry about this. That's weird. Having a little problem with the computer. You test everything beforehand, and then when you get up there, everything breaks on you. So, let's see if we can get this thing to work again. Alright. So, we did an initial test of materials from our special collections in our library for about 1,300 material to just do initial survey test to test the accuracy of the tool, playing about 336 quarter-inch tapes, 373 audio cassettes, 344 VHSs, and about 270 U-matic tapes. So when we ran all the stuff in the survey, you can see the 1 through 3, this is our visual inspection results from the thing. So as you can see, about this is the percentage of the stuff that failed the visual inspection, saying that it was unable to play back due to mold and conditions like that. So, but after we did after we moved on to the playback session, since less the materials that were deemed able to play back, we played back most of them. You can see the success rate is a bit higher. This is the overall thing we're taking into account, both the visual inspection and the playback inspection. It's a bit large, but the stuff gets a bit simpler. Let me break it down a little bit simpler so it's a bit easier to understand. If we look at the ratings of each of everything, this is the things that had a visual rating of 1, visual rating 2, visual rating 3. And then these are the playback ratings for them. But if we just take a look at it in a pass-fail system, it's a bit easier to understand. That stuff with a visual rating of 1 had about a 100% chance of playing back. 2 had about a 90% playback. And 3 had about a 75% ability to play back. So, again, this tool was testing that our rating system was an accurate rating system and evaluated the numbers. So, we're doing a second survey now to verify our findings and actually test the usability of the thing. We're hoping our tool will be available within the end of the year. If you have any contacts, this is my contact information. You can check any information updates on our website, which is libraries.nyu/preservation. You guys have any questions for us? I'm willing to take them. Sorry again for.
Is this on? Yes. Okay. Yeah. We both chose to do access, and one of the reasons our things look so similar is the same access expert designed both of ours for us. We started to work with access because we knew it well, and we had someone expert who could do it for us, and we knew that it was going to be a, for our survey at least, a complicated relational system. Harvard is looking at our tool to see if they can do a web-based version of it, and I think it's going to be a they're going to find it very complicated because of all the interrelationships there. But if they are successful, that will also be made available publicly for people, and they're sort of starting to look at that now. But yes, you do need to have access to use it. What was lacking in it is that when we started, they hadn't finished it yet. And so we didn't know what their timeline was going to be. And, you know, there are now several survey tools out there. There's the FACET tool that Indiana developed, which looks only at audio materials. There's ours. There's NYU's coming. There's Caliper. And Illinois is also working on a tool. They all are a little different. They do things in slightly different ways or look at slightly different ranges of materials. Caliper's is set within a bigger context where you can survey all sorts of media. So I think, you know, we all started working at about the same time when there were no good tools, and now there's a suite of tools.
Yeah, we tried to focus in more. The Caliper tool was a bit larger, as I explained, you know, when at all. We just tried to focus on condition and really explore the aspects of condition assessment to its relationship and preservation priority. That would be, ours was just basically an idle metal assessment, not a, you know, we didn't put. So it's just an item, no association with its, you know, intellectual property or anything like that. No assessment of its content. If it's a commercial tape, it only dealt with the condition of the tape.
Yeah, we have a place where you can put in generation, if known, and we found that in most cases it was unknown. Occasionally something will be, explicitly marked copy, but you can't always trust that either. So. Oh, there were two things were sitting next to each other, did we survey both of them? We did, actually, because frequently the master and the use copy were not anywhere in, approaching each other. All of our stuff is stored in our offsite facility. We'd call back a box. We'd survey what was in the box. We'd send it back. We'd get the next one. And so it was only at the end of the survey when we started compiling all the results that you'd see, oh, look, we got two of these. In collection management in the sense of adding things to it as you get a new collection in, putting it in. Certainly that would be one thing. There is a button you can fill in that says, we have preserved this item too, so that you can sort of take things out of the rankings. I think it might need a little tweaking to make it really useful that way. But again, if you have someone who knows access, they could do that. Yes. Yeah, the first survey was the archival collections survey that looked at all media. And the information that we collected in that survey about audiovisual materials then helped us do the current survey. It's not explicitly or directly tied, and there's no way of connecting the two. At least we haven't built a way of connecting the two, but since they're both access, it would. I'm not a great expert on access, but I believe that you could export information from both of them into a common source. It would take some programming, but it would be doable. Yeah. Yes, we're letting them do that for us, and then we'll take advantage of it.
My predecessor was at OSC and EMEA, and I'll be at EMEA this year.
Yeah. I did EMEA the most recent time. So.
You want you first?
Staffing, you say?
Staffing.
Staffing, I'm sorry. It's basically the first run of the beta test was all done by internships and part-time, and some part-time employers, but all student workers. The current tool is using only part-time staff, and then Yeah, it only has part-time staff working on it. So we're trying to get a different aspect of different people and different levels of expertise.
Yes, and we had Marco Suero, who was full-time for 2 years, who is a sound engineer. So he was designing it as he went along. So he wasn't a non-expert doing it in that sense. But we've had some people try the thing since, and they seem to be comfortable with it. And so in 2 years, he managed to look at 42,000 things and design the surveys. What took the longest amount of time was actually getting hold of the things physically, that, they're in off-site. You have to figure out where they are, get hold of them. Surveying them takes a minute or two. Then you have to get them put back. So it's, the logistics take more time than the survey.
We have no, it's tentatively at the end of the year, but it would be available from our website, which is listed right there.
Yeah, we surveyed the holdings of five special collections libraries at Columbia. One of those was the oral history collection, whose collections are entirely audio. So that was relatively straightforward. Everything we looked at, it was all there. It was just a matter of identifying it and getting it into the survey. The other four libraries are holders of manuscript and archive collections. And what you would have is somebody's papers, and you had to go through the finding aid and see that it meant, and we actually had a student who did nothing but read finding aids for a while. Luckily, most of them, ours are now up online, so you could do this in an automated fashion, but looking for the word media, any combination of the words that might indicate that there was something, because many finding aids do not specify this stuff. It's in the miscellaneous box or what have you. And, so yes, that is possibly the most difficult challenge, is if you haven't segregated the media, is just finding it. Yeah, one could certainly use it to do that. Since almost all of our archival collections are now stored at our off-site facility, which has appropriate HVAC, it's less important to us now to pull them out of those boxes and put them in their own containers. But now, for the first time, we actually know for almost, I'm sure we missed a few things, but we actually know which boxes they're in, which is a great thing. I think the situation is very different at NYU.
For our AV material, we were doing, our survey was done with three special collections, and anything that can go wrong went wrong. They didn't have it listed as individual. Somebody earlier went through and tried to find all the audio, so we tried to base it based on the information, but we actually had to go through and open each box and actually see what was in each box, define what AV material was in each collection. And then, in the middle of our survey, they decided to switch the storage area, so LMR, the collections, had to move their stuff to another building. And we still have one box of stuff that we have to return from the first thing that we haven't found actually what box it goes back to yet. But our second one, we're focusing mainly on one special collection to make things simpler, who already separated the AV material into a back of the archives kind of situation. So it's a bit simpler this time. But that's my answer to that.
Hi, I was going to ask if you track the migrated media in the same database and if that relation stays.
We did not survey any audio collection that we had already preserved through reformatting, because we had plenty to survey without doing those things. But where we had multiple generations of analog, those are all in there. Marcos built that, partly out of his own knowledge. He's someone who has worked in audio and audio preservation for many years. But we also talked to experts in the moving image and audio field. He was in touch with everyone he could think of, reading the literature and so on and so forth, trying to pull together what is the current state of knowledge about things like obsolescence. And as I said, all of these things are in tables in the guts of the Access program, so that if tomorrow they stopped making CD players, for instance, we could go into that table and change the thing that says rate all CDs as, number one, perfect, not yet, not even obsolescent. They're they're still fully programmed and usable, and move that to a 3 or a 4 or whatever is appropriate. You know, the trick will, as you say, be making sure that we pay attention to those things and actually do them as new information comes up. And I don't have an audiovisual specialist on my staff at all, and that's one area where I'm hoping to be able to build a program where I'd have someone who could pay attention to those things and do the updating as necessary. Yeah. Yeah, in the manual it says, you know, this is based on knowledge as of, you know, 2007, but, you know, we will try to update as appropriate our copy, but if someone's already downloaded it, you know, there's not much we can do. And, of course, that's true of any tool that's out there. It's only as good as when it was designed.
Paula, I have to get back to you on that. I have to actually look. Paula?
Yeah. And since our survey doesn't go to playback, it only goes to inspection. You know, we did that much of it, essentially.
Yeah.
I believe he looked at 300-some collections. Some of them were heavily media, and others would have one or two pieces, so it really ranged the gamut. 2 years, yeah. The intellectual content, you know, the value ratings for the content is done at the collection level because without playback, you can't really tell what any individual piece has on it. You know, you can read what it says on the box and hope that that's accurate, and some of the boxes don't say anything. And so there it was along the lines of, this collection as a whole is considered to be highly important. You know, Meyer Shapiro's papers, you know, the art and architectural historian, is a very important collection. We know that the audio materials in this are his lectures. We make the assumption that they are as important as the collection as a whole. If it's, you know, John Smith's family papers and there's, you know, something that's labeled home movie such and such, you know, John Smith's papers weren't that important to us to begin with, and his home movie probably is even less important to us. So it's a very rough cut, and, you know, but it gives you something, you know, sort of like a bell curve to say these are the ones we really want to look at more closely. It won't tell you take this item, but at least it gives you a first cut.
We have time for about one or two more questions.
Well, I keep trying to formulate it to take it a step farther because what's on my mind are the other preservation care of things. Or the age of a videotape about whether or not it's been exercised in the past 10 years or anything like that, that can't be, has that been a consideration of factoring that in your survey? The idea, particularly with the Columbia one, where you don't have playback, and how, you know, you're clearly indicating it's inspection, but I'm just trying to get to the point, can this even be modified, or do you see that? Where does it happen then that you think about those aspects of
Think about prospectively or to think about what has happened to it in the past?
You know, what you need to get to a certain point in visually inspecting it and without playback.
Yes.
How does that factor?
Yeah, it's true. Something can be in perfect condition when it's examined visually and, as Ben said, be blank or, you know, they put the microphone next to the refrigerator and sat on the other side of the room. Well, you know, it could be a lot, you know, it could have been lousy the day it was made, and, you know, what has happened to it since has nothing to do with the quality of its content. But given that so many of our objects were fragile, and given that we didn't own the equipment, we could only go so far. You know, this survey doesn't give you the ultimate answers, but, you know, we try to get you a certain degree so that at least you're not wasting your time worrying about that clump of things. You can waste your time worrying about the clump that's a little more important. And certainly it can serve as the basis for we need to do a better job going forward. You know, if you find that the housings on 80% of your stuff are lousy, you know that what you really need to do is a rehousing project. And you can focus on that, or, you know, they're all located in places with high temperature and high humidity. You need to do a new storage thing. So it can do some gross planning on that level. I think the caliper tool builds in more of the what should we do, what is our gross preservation planning to come out of this. And the Illinois tool They're building a lot of – they have a wiki that accompanies it that goes into great detail, lots, you know, hundreds and hundreds of links to how do I take care of collections and so forth. So, as I said, all of these tools cover different aspects of a very big problem.
I agree. And with that, I think that we're out of time, I think. But as for me, you can speak. Any questions you have for me, you can come up, and I believe the same is for you. So, sorry. And this is my voice.